This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Augie Turak is on a spiritual quest, but he doesn't chant or wear saffron robes. He wears a business suit, and he started two successful software businesses. Augie believes in self-knowledge, and he thinks that certain spiritual practices can lead to a successful business. He's developed this philosophy over the past 17 years in South Carolina. That's where he visits the monks of Mepkin Abbey. They, too, are successful businessmen, and Augie wanted to know why. In his latest book, he lays out the details. It's called Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks, One CEO's Quest for Meaning and Authenticity. Augie Turak joins us again on the program. Welcome back, Augie. Good to talk to you.
Frank, it's great to be back.
Tell us about this. Let's talk about your business first before we talk about the book. You have started two successful software businesses, right?
Right.
And, you know, most people imagine CEOs hanging out with other business folk, Chamber of Commerce, all of that. You hang out with monks. What's going on?
Well, I've always been interested in spirituality going all the way back to my my college days. And sometimes it wasn't through a Christian format. I was very interested in Zen Buddhism and studied under a Zen teacher for many years. But the point is that whether you took it literally or metaphorically, if you seek first the kingdom of heaven, everything else takes care of itself. My quest on my life was always you know, to answer what is the life worth living and how do I then live the life worth living. And this led me into all kinds of adventures and sometimes misadventures with people like Louis R. Mobley, the founder of the IBM Executive School, who parenthetically, you know, I was his student, but I met him because I went looking for life advice, not for business advice. And so so even starting my companies, and I work for companies like MTV as well, everything, they were all byproducts. They were all things that were offshoots of something that was always central to my life.
Did you see the spiritual quest? I mean, people do this often. They say, you know what? There's something wrong with my approach to business. Maybe I just got to settle down. I got to center myself, and then I can be a successful business person. In other words, that some kind of retreat would be a tool to business success.
Well, no, I never did that. And I think that what I'm arguing for in my book is that that's the wrong approach. For one of, you know, I try to stay away even from the word spirituality a lot in the book. And now I talk about authenticity more than spirituality. But the quest for an authentic life or a life worth living, you know, is not there to make you better in business. Business, for me, always existed as a way of making me a better person. It put me in the crosshairs. It put me under pressure. I had to make the really tough decisions. In some ways, it's very hard to be a good person. And when you're sitting in a corner somewhere in a yoga posture, you can always imagine that if the chips were down, you would never betray your friend, or you would never lay off your brother, or you would never fire your sister. Well, okay, go out there and show me. You know. And so I said to myself, let's see whether how my values will stand up under these real world pressures. And interestingly enough, that was the reason I actually started my business with four other people, guys, who wanted that same thing. We saw it as an experiment, a life experiment, not as a business necessarily.
And what you do in the book, I think, is interesting. You don't show the monks as somebody who sat down and gave you lessons in morality and taught you how to pray so you'd get guidance. They're actually object lessons in successful business, and it's the way they live their lives in community with authenticity, as you describe it. It's precisely that's the business model and not necessarily the spiritual or moral model.
Oh, absolutely. But to me, what makes it so fascinating is that it's all one. You know, you hear people talk about all the time about balance, work-life balance, personal balance and everything. You know, the monks don't, it never even occurs to them. Everything is one. In the very beginning of my book, one of the first things I say, prayer is a form of work and work is a form of prayer for the monks. So it's all one thing, and they're not trying to parse it all out. And so they have a high overarching unified mission for their lives, and these, whether it's work or life or their personal lives, all these other things are just, you know, legs of the stool, so to speak, that are underneath. They don't have that particular conflict. And we're facing that more and more in our own business lives, our own professional lives, because as you know, men and women are both working. They're both bringing their personal lives to work and their work to back to their personal lives. These hard and fast walls, like the monastic walls, are evaporating into what I call membranes in the book. You know, even at the monastery, Father Francis's vision for the monastery, that when he started making some changes down there, was, although he never said so much, my interpretation was he wanted to take the old cloister wall that's hard and fast, seals the world out, and turn it into a membrane, living, breathing membrane that is sharing energy with its environment, but still keeping the impurities out. That's what a membrane does. And so I see that our whole lives are becoming that. We no longer have any walls. You know, with the internet, with our cell phones, with there is no personal, private, personal, business, professional, public. It's all one. It's all one and the same thing.
Well, tell us how they do this, because they do also run businesses. They're not just praying and chanting all day long. They've got some businesses, and they got to support themselves. Tell us about the businesses and how these principles, this kind of holistic approach, serves them.
Well, first of all, they get up at 3 o'clock in the morning. When I'm down there, I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and you go to vigils. And so you've already gone to about two or three services by the time you start working at 7:30 or 8:30 or 8 o'clock in the morning. They typically work 4 hours a day, although, you know, you get odd jobs that take you make you do things after that. Right now, their main business, they used to be into eggs. They've transitioned into mushrooms. Exotic mushrooms is what the abbot, we're talking about Metkin Abbey Monastery, the Trappist Monastery in outside of Charleston, South Carolina. And they also do organic fertilizer. They also have a gift shop. They also have a tract of renewable timber that they take care of. They also have this wonderful conference center and library that they take care of. They host all these guests all the time. So the big question that I pose, both in my article in Forbes that spawned my book and in my book, is how do 20 senior citizens working 4 hours a day, mostly in silence, accomplish all this stuff, you know? And I think it's because they do everything with a prayerful attitude. Everything they do is, and to use, you know, I understand you're a Catholic, Frank. When we were kids and going to Catholic school, at least I went to Catholic school, we were always being told to offer it up. Everything is seen as an offering, and they do everything in a very, very dutiful way for the mission and the overall good of the community and the organization. And so they get a lot done with a lot less friction than we do in our secular organizations where oftentimes it's every man for himself.
Well, is that transferable? If you don't run a business based on prayer and work or prayer and community, can you even get it done?
Absolutely. I mean, there's I introduce in the book the concept of what I call transformational organization. And I put into that some case studies of companies that I was actually familiar with, including my own company, which I flatter myself was a transformational organization, but also the AAA, the Marine Corps, Lou Mobley's IBM Executive School, and the monks. Okay, so what is a transformational organization? I said a transformational organization has three things. First of all, it has a high overarching mission worthy of being selflessly served. Let's take the Marine Corps rather than the monks. What is the mission of the Marine Corps? To serve the country, to serve the Corps, to serve your fellow Marine. There's no I in team in the Marine Corps mission, okay? The second thing that they have is a transformational process. They offer people an opportunity to be transformed. In the Marine Corps, that would be the boot camp. You don't become a Marine by signing your name on the page. You become a recruit by signing your name. Only at a certain point in time, when they think you've passed all the tests, they say, now you're a Marine. The third thing that they all have in common, all transformational organizations have in common, is a methodology for bringing this transformation about. At the monastery, it's called formation, based on the rule of St. Benedict. At the Alcoholics Anonymous, it's called the 12-step program. Marines have boot camp, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the IBM Executive School was a 12-week corporate boot camp that Lou Mobley put together. Had no lectures, no reading books. It was all experiential learning, all putting people through that. There's also, so I use some examples of what I call these organizations consciously transformational, because they understand what they're doing and they offer people this transformational opportunity right there in the mission.
I'm going to stop you there and talk about this word transformation for a second, mm-hmm. because you kind of set up a hierarchy and say it's not just a matter of exhortation and lecture and training your behavior. This is a real transformation of the heart, and you offer a comparison of the various kinds of transformation that are more or less useful in this process.
Right. Well, first of all, what is the absolute secret to success? Motivation and passion. I mean, we can pick up the, you know, it's amazing to me. You pick up the paper every day and you'll hear and you'll see some story about a woman who picks a car up off of her child. Why? Because she's passionately motivated. So ordinary human beings can achieve extraordinary things when they're passionately motivated. So to me, my model of motivation is that all motivation can be talked about as a transformational, a quest for transformation. An acorn wants to be an oak, but it doesn't learn to be an oak. It becomes an oak, right? Life, death, back to life again, transformation. Okay, but there's three kinds of transformation. When a thirsty man drinks, he transforms his condition. When a poor man hits the lottery, he has transformed his circumstances. But when Mr. Scrooge wakes up on Christmas morning, he has experienced a transformation of being. And a transformation of being is what we're all really looking for in the final analysis. And we cannot achieve a transformation of being by conditions or circumstances. And when we try to accomplish a transformation of being through, we end up just, you know, eating, for example, is a transformation condition. We just eat too much and we get overweight. Right. Or we try to become famous, and that's a transformation of circumstances. But what happens to many celebrities is they realize deep inside that they're still the same schnook they always were. Right. And now they have to put up with the hypocrisy, plus they have to continually con people. So to me, the transformation of being is what we're really looking at. And that's akin to a caterpillar becoming a butterfly.
And it's interesting because it seems to me there's one of the dangers of a consumer society where we can confuse these transformations. We can consume, buy things that distract us and make us think we're filling that void, think we're making that transformation because now I have a new thing and therefore I'm a new person.
Well, actually, marketers, you know, really, really shrewd marketers have figured this out. I've been in business all my life. I've been in marketing all my life. And sales, I started in sales. I've never heard anybody actually say this, but I've written about it where I said, if you think about it, we'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony. When Coca-Cola came out with that unbelievable ad campaign, they were saying to people that we're going to transform you into peaceful people if you just drink Coca-Cola. So what they're really doing is they're offering a transformation of condition and promising a transformation of being. So ever since advertising made the leap from to emotion, to appealing to emotion, to appealing to mood, you'll become cool if you do this. Your life will be better if you do this. You'll be happier if you use our toilet paper. They've been on to this for a long time. But it's inauthentic in the sense that, I don't know whether you realize this or not, Frank, but you will not become a peaceful person just because you drink Coke.
It hasn't worked yet, but I think I'm just about two or three cases short, Augie. I think that's it. It's just not enough Coke. That'll do it. So how does monastic life recontextualize this and bring about this kind of transformation? And as I said, very successful business. I mean, they stay in business.
Well, the most important, the biggest buzzword in business right now, which I find mildly encouraging but mildly amusing, is authenticity. You cannot swing the proverbial dead cat in business right now without hearing or reading about somebody talking about authentic businesses, authentic brands, authentic products, authentic leadership. And as I wryly noted in my book, I said, authenticity is nothing new to the monks. This isn't the next best thing to them. They've been doing it for 2,000 years. They've been churning out authentic brands and products and leaders for all those years. And so to me, the key is that they have tapped in to the human desire for a transformation into an authentic person. And by authentic person, I say it's a transformational movement from selfishness to selflessness. And they've offered that the way they're – and they get highly – these people are – you know, the monks are extremely highly motivated. They believe deeply in what they do and why they're doing it. And – in my book, I also talk about what I call unconsciously transformational organizations. And unconsciously are often small entrepreneurial companies. I actually was heavily involved with Microsoft in their early days, and everybody was sleeping under their desk, and everybody was just, go Microsoft, go Microsoft. They didn't care about money. They didn't care about anything. Just to be part of the few, the proud, not the Marines, this Microsoft, you know. And you see that a lot in small entrepreneurial companies. And my point is that without realizing it, people like Steve Jobs and Bill Gates were offering people transformational opportunities without realizing it. But then when they grow, they no longer offer those things. They just give people money instead, and everything just, you know, I'm not against giving people money, by the way, but that's a transformation of circumstance. It's necessary, but that all goes away. When I was at Microsoft, a quick story about that, I asked one of these guys who were so fanatical for Microsoft. I said, what's the secret? You know, what's the secret? And he turned to me, he said, goat rodeos. I said, what the heck? I said, what's a goat rodeo? Feeling my age, you know. He was only about 30. And he said, I'll tell you what a goat rodeo is. It's Friday night at 6 o'clock, and you get a call from Bill Gates. And he says he's going to demo your product to Tokyo to 10,000 people on Monday morning, and it's going to be simulcast all over the world to millions more, he said. And your product's only half done, and it's buggy as hell, but you and your team stay up all weekend, 24 hours a day, and somehow 2 minutes before he goes on stage, you deliver the bits, and everything goes great, and you're a hero. He says, that's one goat rodeo. He said, you do 4 or 5 goat rodeos, you've made your bones at Microsoft. So what he was saying was that that all this passion and drive and excitement was because Bill Gates, I think unknowingly, I have no way of knowing this for sure, was offering this kid, I call him a kid, an opportunity to be transformed through this thing he called a goat rodeo.
What's interesting in all of this is the great paradox, because you have authenticity, which means becoming your authentic, true self.
Right.
And you can't, and here's the paradox, it doesn't happen outside of a community. So community is essential to this, and also two key ingredients to becoming who you are and in charge of yourself are obedience and humility, the two things that we think are antithetical to the self.
Absolutely. You know, in the Christian tradition, I'm very fond of St. Paul's talking about what's called kenosis. And kenosis is a Greek term that means self-emptying. It's in a lot of ways, it's the goal of the Christian life. And I argue, again, I hope very persuasively, that we only think we want selfishness. What we really want is selflessness. And we can look at the ordinary English language to prove this. When people talk about self-conscious, that means you're going to screw up on the radio like I am right now if I'm too self-conscious, or I'm not going to be able to enjoy making love, or I'm not going to be at stage fright. It's all these bad connotations. But when we're selfless, time flies. We're absorbed in a task. We're absorbed in our work. What's absorbed? Our self is absorbed. We've lost ourselves, lost in thought, we talk about. These are all happy kinds of things. So to me, we're always searching for distraction, which is the way we lose ourselves. The problem is these are transformations of condition.
Right.
You lose yourself for a few minutes, and then you come back and say, darn, I got to get those taxes done.
Can these monastic virtues of humility and obedience, which really is a kind of a grassroots from the ground up, even though the abbot's the final voice, it's a real kind of complex system, can they be transferred to secular
Absolutely.
Businesses?
Absolutely. And to me, what you're really talking about is a community spirit. For a real community spirit to take place, you're going to have to, you know, the egos have got to be restrained. That's where your humility is. And you have to have a sense of obedience. And rather than a sense of obedience to a single person, what about a sense of obedience to the mission and what we're all trying, what we're all in this together all about? So to me, leadership's job is to articulate a vision worth sacrificing for. We all really are happiest when we're sacrificing. You know, we want to give ourselves away to something that's important and good and all that kind of stuff. We don't want to hoard ourselves. We want to give ourselves away. So we have to have something that's worth giving ourselves away to. And that's just having Lou Mobley said that managers get things done. Great leaders decide the things that are worth doing in the first place. And once you, then the second part of this puzzle, you know, you have your mission and you have something worth doing. The second part is this community. In business, we talk about it all the time. We don't talk about community. We call it culture. And you have to have an authentic culture. If I had to say over the 35 years that I've been in business, the most important thing that you can accomplish in business is have the right culture.
Augie, always a pleasure. Good to talk with you.
Thank you so much, Frank. I really enjoyed it.
Augie Turok is an entrepreneur and a writer. His latest book called Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks, One CEO's Quest for Meaning and Authenticity. Just ahead, we'll talk with one of the founding members of the Kids in the Hall. Stay tuned.